So this is a speaker meeting. Joaquin will speak for 10 minutes tonight and then turn the meeting over to our main speaker, Claire, who will share her experience, strength, and hope. So at this point, I'm going to let Joaquin take it over.
Hi, can everyone hear me? Hi, can everyone hear me?
Yeah.
This is my first time speaking, so my name is Joaquin. My mother's name is Roselia. My father's name is Francisco. I am Comanche. I'm Yaqui. I'm Chamorro. I'm Chicano. I'm urban, so that means I come from concrete, and I'm a two-legged. I'm all those things, and that's what I was taught, and that's how I balance myself, and that's how I know who I am going forward. And so I'm going to tell a little story and talk to you a little bit about how my life became unbalanced and how alcohol played a huge part in that, and how I'm just starting to get some sort of balance back with the help of AA and a lot of prayer. So I was born and raised in East Los Angeles. All my family had jobs. On the weekends, we got together. And the way alcohol came into my life and the way I understood it was that it was a reward. After working hard all week, family got together, partaked, drank, enjoyed themselves because they earned it. So when you ask me, one of the things was, well, when was my first drink? I really don't know. Could have been an uncle, could have been something I snuck. Have no idea. But that was my existence growing up. I didn't really drink until I went to college. And that was my first experience with alcohol, and it was great. Wonderful. Going to parties, feeling invincible, lubricating, talking, enjoying yourself, enjoying myself. And I liked it so much, my first semester I got an academic probation. And so that's kind of how I started figuring out how to deal with alcohol and manage it, try to manage it on my own, and somehow I was able to capture it. Got back on track, learned how to party a little bit smarter, so I thought. But I overcame it, and I powered through it. At least I thought I did. Met my wife there. Got married when I was about 26. Have two kids. And the pattern that I had growing up continued. With all my friends, we would get together on the weekends, we would have a bit too much to drink. Not sloppy drunk, just enjoying ourselves. Because we worked and we earned it. And we deserved it. And this went on until probably I was about, I don't know, about 30, 31, 32 when I started discovering wine. And what started out, one or two glasses turned into a bottle at a mill, asking my wife at the time to drive home from the party instead of being able to go ahead and drive home. Things of that nature. And where I started coming unbalanced in my life was when I got divorced. Because there was no such thing as divorce where I'm from. Stuff happens in life. The family stays together. That's what I knew. That was my model for whether it's right or wrong. That's just kind of how I'm wired. So the divorce wasn't my choice. And, you know, there's no need to go into particulars, but that happened when I was 35, 36. And so having my kids half-time was hard for me to deal with and not seeing them on a daily basis. And now I had 50% of time where they weren't around. And so I filled up that time slowly with going out with my friends, drinking, driving, waking up, just having no clue how I got home. Learning how to drive with one eye because there's two or three different lanes and you try to go in the middle lane. And thank God that they have bumpers at the edges, so when you hit it, I've learned to move over. So, this went on, and what ended up starting to happen was I started taking it out on my children, especially my son, and he would not do so well in school. And so with the more that I drank, the more that I got upset with him, the more I yelled, and the more I damaged him, to the point where when he was a freshman, he decided that he wanted to live with his mother. And so I lost my son's presence in my life for high school. He didn't want to talk to me, rightfully so. I drove my mother out of my house. She came up from the east side to be part of our family, and she couldn't take it anymore. And so the woman that brought me in and taught me right from wrong, and mind you, all this behavior is not modeled. I drove her out. I started alienating my daughter. Her last year, her sophomore year in school, she didn't do as well because she was dealing with daddy and seeing which dad was there at the house. She would come in a few times, and luckily she stopped the house from getting on fire a couple of times because I had left stuff cooking and was just passed out. The type of drinking I do is I black out. I drink till I black out. I wake up. I continue to drink. I pass out. I wake up, continue to drink, and I pass out, and I go on a 3, 4, 5, sometimes 7 to 10 day benders of just doing that. I didn't dream for about, I have no idea, for about 5 to 7 years, I just dreamt blackness. So what led me? It started affecting my work. I've been able to hold on to a job for about 15 years. And I needed to hold on to that because that's the last bastion of what I have that defines me, is to provide for my family. So I checked myself into Kaiser, to CDRP, and that's what started me on my journey. I found meetings. I started out the Al Cerrito Fellowship. I went to other ones. I found a home at the Thursday meetings at Chips and Cake. I really like that meeting. It makes me feel good to go there and meet people and hear stories. Got a sponsor. Found a native sponsor, which was good because we went through the steps, and the steps are, you know, a bit Judeo-Christian based, and I don't mean that as a slam. It's just it's just a bit different. I don't believe I was crazy, that second step. I believed I was sick, very much so, and that made sense to me. And so having someone to be able to talk to helped me out tremendously, and finding a good sponsor really did. Service, I still need to do my part. This is my first step. I'm hoping to get something a little bit more on an ongoing basis. So what's my life like today? I just had dinner with my son yesterday. So he called me up and he wanted to hang out. So that's good. My daughter's doing very well in school. We talk about my problem. Doesn't happen a lot, but at least we're able to go ahead and talk about it as a family. And I also try to teach her as well, you know, when you go out to a party, make sure you hold on to your drink. Don't accept a drink from someone else. You know, you go in a group, come out of a group, you know, typical stuff. Stuff a normal father should do with a 17-year-old girl. So it's really a beautiful thing to be able to re-experience that again. Service, I just came from Makawa. I put on my regalia. My last time was 2.5 years ago. Before that was probably about 15 years. So it's good to go back out there and see family that still recognize me and welcome me back. And being able to do that is good medicine for me. And it's part of my recovery. It's part of my program, as well as this is part of my program and recovery. So with that, I see I'm a bit late, but I just very much appreciate you guys' attention. Thank you very much. I'm done speaking. Thank you.
I'm lazy. My name is Claire. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. Well, I like holding it. I'm just joking. All right. I'm from. I don't know how to work this thing. I just keep it like that. Is that good? All right.
Yeah.
I'm from Kentucky. The reason I'm speaking is because a friend of mine comes to this meeting and she asked to have me as a speaker, so you can blame her if I do a bad job. She lived in Kentucky at the time and whined about it quite a lot, but she was sober, so, and she was young, and I was young and I was sober. I was about 3 months sober when I met her, and it was so nice to meet somebody who was young. It was kind of fun. And we've been friends ever since, and that was, it was like 9 years ago, which is really awesome, yeah. But, I came from a family of, really, really high bottom alcoholics. I was just telling him, my story isn't one of those under the bridge style stories. I grew up, in an upper middle class Anglo-Saxon WASPy family. A lot of lawyers and entrepreneurs and doctors and a lot of expectations and a lot of big houses and mental illness underneath it. And it was very deceptive. My family was very good at hiding shit and my dad was, he was very kind of straight edge, like Mr. Uptight. My mom was all like fun, party, crazy woman. And I was just sort of their kid that they didn't necessarily expect to have. So me and my sister at a young age interacted with alcohol. My parents would have these big parties and kind of wine and dine and schmooze, and we got to play bartender. And I remember doing that when I was, I think, maybe 8 years old. And my sister and I were so different because there was this dude that kept coming in. He's like, I want a Bud Light. And then he kept coming in, asking for another one. He's like, you know what I want? And I'd be like, Bud Light. My sister's like, I don't think he should be drinking so much. And I was like, come get another Bud Light. And then my sister, like, went off and told my dad. And then my dad told his wife. And it was just, like, totally different. Because I just loved watching people get drunk. And I remember drinking alcohol. I remember it being served at Easter to me as a young child. I remember maybe being, like, six when I was first drinking it. I was also a really socially awkward child, which I'm sure none of you all know what that feels like, but it felt really bad. And I stole my mom's wine. My mom drank wine every day in a box. It was Franzia. And I was 11, and I was like, I'm going to figure out what is up with this, what is so great about it. So I drank a couple glasses, and I didn't feel drunk. I just felt really weird, and I just felt weird. So the next day, I did the same thing. And the following day, And in the book, it talks about this thing. It's called a mental obsession and a phenomenon of craving. So that was the first time I looked back and I realized I had had two things that were occurring. And my mom one day was like, are you drinking my wine? And I was like, no, I'm a kid. I don't drink. And she's like, okay. And I was like, and like, she was not really supposed to be a mom, but whatever. So my next drunk was when I was 13. And one thing that's really common in my history was I had a major thing with loving to change the way I feel, and I'm spitting because I'm so nervous. And another thing I had was I'm completely addicted to like guys, you know. So I'm 13, and the cool eighth grader who was like 15 was like my crush, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna get drunk, and I passed out on our kitchen floor. Of course, my mom didn't know. She took us to the movie a couple hours later, and he got way drunker, and the cops came, and he pulled out, like, a Swiss Army knife and stuff, and it was like, all the other girls were crying, and I'm just like, what the hell's going on? And nobody thought for a second that I had drank that day. And that was the type of alcoholic I was. I was like that sweet girl, that good girl. Like, I know some of these girls in here know what I'm talking about. Like, you know, like, I'll steal your money and, like, help you find it. Like, I'll bat my eyelashes. I will get out of a DUI in a heartbeat. Like, I should not have gotten away with the stuff I was getting away with. And it started at a really young age, partially because my parents, like, it's not anybody's fault but my own. I'm not going to say that because it's not. But my parents didn't really watch us. And, you know, they just were not, like, whatever. And, you know, I loved getting away with stuff. So that's what I did. And I just kept drinking throughout high school. I was really insecure. I didn't know how to socialize with people. All the things I talk about in the book, you know, like, we know it causes problems. Drinking causes problems. But that feeling you have, that, like, sense of, like, okay, like, I'm here, this is good, we're laughing, we're joking, like, I'm one of, you know, everybody, I'm with everybody, I'm, like, part of the crowd, like, I am it. And that's what I was addicted to, was that feeling. The problem was that feeling was, like, fleeting, and there was horrible consequences. And I continued drinking. I started, you know, dabbling in like, pills and stuff, like, you know, Adderall and stuff. And I liked that because it made me feel like superwoman, and I didn't look drunk, so it looked like I was sober. At least I thought I looked sober. Probably didn't, looking back. But there were a couple times I tried to stop or whatever. When I went to college, I continued. I was a blackout drinker from a very young age, and I was also a very sloppy blackout drinker. So I wasn't the type of person that would get drunk and, like, you know, maybe be a little annoying. I was, like, super annoying. I would, like, pee on myself. I was the girl that threw up. I was the crying drunk girl. I was just really, like, a problem for a lot of people. I, like, ruined people's good times. So it got worse and worse. And that was what helped elevate me up into drugs, because drugs helped me not get so drunk, which helped me not be as much of a problem, because I wasn't in a sorority because I didn't have the patience to sit through rush, and they dropped me because I had mono. And so I became a little sister for a fraternity. And me and my roommate were like, shh. And she was the only person I knew that was as bad as me. So that's why that relationship was really good. And her nickname was Guzzler, and it was really funny. And like, she seriously, like, she had like a personality change with certain liquors. Like, whenever she drank Goldschlager, like, her personality changed. She just got crazy and she talked in like the Satan voice, and we loved it. It was so funny. But it was like, we went to school at this college in Alabama, so, you know, it was like, it's cool to party, it's cool to drink, but, like, do it classy. And we weren't classy at all, and the guys of the fraternity were like, we're going to kick you out because you all are embarrassing the fraternity. And to be told that you're an embarrassment to a fraternity, my parents had gotten divorced, and I obviously have always had issues. I'm like, I don't really know why I was. I was, you know, kind of messed up. And I met a guy. Of course, I was drunk, and I slept with his roommate a month before, and I wasn't planning on sleeping with him, but it happened. So, but I actually fell for him, and I fell for him really, really bad. And that was my other drug, and I don't know, I think my alcoholism was a problem to him, and he, like, broke my heart, and I don't think that today something like that would affect me the same way. It's just, I had nothing inside of me spiritually. I had nothing, like, honestly, alcohol and drugs was holding me together. I mean, I was, like, hanging by a thread. You know, I had a girlfriend that got sober around the same time as me, and she was like, I took pills to feel normal. I drank to feel normal. You know, like, I really couldn't do normal things. I couldn't live life without being altered. And he was kind of that added thing, and he comforted me. And when he broke up with me, I felt like my whole world crashed. So I moved to harder drugs, and, you know, drugs is a part of my story. So that helped me have my first bottom. So my first bottom was when I was 19, and I was coming off the drugs, and I told my mom, and I came home, and I had never done that drug in Kentucky, where I'm from. But within, like, 3 months, I was using again because, you know, when you're hooked, all of a sudden you just have this ability to find stuff, and, I mean, it's not hard. But I got off of the drugs and just drank and stuff occasionally, and then I also had a history of, and I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think the message needs to be clear that it's really about, you know, problems with alcoholism, but I had a lot of problems. So I also had an eating disorder at the same time, and I went to a therapist for that, and she's like, well, why don't you go to AA? And I'm like, but I don't need AA. I'm a drug addict. I'm an addict. I'm not an alcoholic. And she was like, well, why don't you just go? And I was like, okay. And so I went to this meeting, like, thinking that there'd be, like, 5, like, really old guys, and I could just talk about me for, like, an hour, you know? And I went to this meeting. It was a huge meeting, and there's tons of young people, and it was, like, clear. People had gotten dressed up, and it was, like, this guy I knew from, I was wearing my high school name sweatshirt, and he's like, oh, my God, do you know this girl starts with an R? And I was like, yeah, I do. And he named, like, a lifelong nemesis, and he's like, she's amazing. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And but the meeting was really cool, and somebody had shared their story. They picked up a year. They and their wife had both been using really hard drugs, and they were back together. And it was, like, the most amazing story. And they also read The Promises that night, which really hit me because I'd never been able to describe what my issues were. Like, but they said, fear of other people and of economic insecurity will leave us. And I was like, I never realized that that's what I had, but I had this like fear of people. And it comes out in different ways, like being too loud, being too quiet, getting too close, getting too far. Like there's so many ways it can come across. And I thought you only went to one meeting. I didn't know you went to a lot of meetings. And I didn't know you like socialized afterwards. And I only thought you went to AA meetings if you were like in a crisis. And when the meeting was over, everyone's all like, so where are you working? And just like talking to each other like normal. Like normal. And then they like came up to me, like a flock of them, and they were like, this is her first meeting. Oh my God, it's her first meeting. And I'm like, why are they talking like that? Like they're acting so weird. And they were like, here's my number, here's my number, here's my number. Call me anytime if you want to have coffee. And I was like, God, these people are such losers. Like they go and have coffee. I was like, that's pathetic. And I was like, yeah, I think I might come to like another meeting or whatever. And they're like, you need to go every day, 90 and 90. Really, meeting makers make it. And I'm like, whoa. Oh my God, people are crazy. And I try to make sure that if I talk to newcomers, I probably still sound crazy to them because it's just such an extreme change of a lifestyle, you know what I mean? Especially to a newcomer. But I try to not be coming on too strong. I did used to, when I had been in AA for a while, to go chase after them and stuff. And I'm sure I just scared people away. But but whatever reason, I kept going to meetings. And I was a cocktail waitress at the time. And I drank, actually, while I was going to meetings because I thought that was, like, funny, and I didn't think I was an alcoholic. And I was drinking one night, my free shift drink, and I was – oh, yeah, and I totaled my car at that point. So I was drinking, and I was like, maybe I should, like, actually do this the right way. Like, maybe I should just, like, stop drinking and just see what happens. And there was a lot of people talking about things, particularly the steps, because that's like a big part of a 12-step program is you do the 12 steps. And there was, you know, there's a lot of people like hyping it up. I had the spiritual awakening. It was like so amazing. And like, I was like, I want that. Like, that sounds awesome. Like, I'm thinking it's going to be like trippy and it's going to be like bright colors and just awesome. So I was like, I'll stay sober long enough to have a spiritual awakening. And then I'll just do whatever I want after that. So I asked this person to be my sponsor, and I, by the way, was not one of those people that, like, comes into AA and gets sober and seems, like, together. I was, like, the ugly crier in AA. Melina remembers. It was so bad. It was, like, every day, I was like, yeah. And I just looked, I looked retarded, and it was just really bad. So, yeah, so, you know, I know that, like, it's really hard getting sober because you really are like a baby all over again. Like, I felt like I had just, I don't know, I felt like reality, I felt stripped of, like, I don't know, I could barely function when I got sober. So, it was really hard. God had given me a job after I quit cocktail waitressing. I got to work at Denny's and make like $50 a night. But all these people from the program came in after meetings, and I would talk to them. And like my managers are like, "What is she doing?" I'm like, "Oh my God, yeah, I'm on step 3. Like I feel like I'm really making a change." Like, and it was really good for me. And I was in college at the time. Still was in college, and you know, I did little things that I didn't want to do, which was really helpful. I remember calling this lady, and you know, I didn't really know her very well, so I didn't really care what she thought of me, and I was just like, I'm just really, really sorry for myself, because I don't even think I said sorry for myself because I didn't realize that's what I was doing. It was self-pity. But I think I was like, I'm just really sad because I'm not where I want to be in life and just everything sucks and it's horrible. And she's like, well, do you know what I think? And I was like, yeah, what do you think? And she's like, you're really self-centered. And I was like, okay. And she's like, why don't you, like, clean out some ashtrays? You know, like, if you want self-esteem, you have to commit esteemable acts. And I was like, okay. So I started doing stuff like shaking people's hands and giving my number out and, you know, calling people and asking how their day was going before diving immediately into my dramas and stuff. And, you know, it did make me feel better, you know? And I did start going through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought that was the Bible when people were talking about it. I thought it was a slang term for Bible because I didn't know anything about AA, but it's actually the big book is the big book. And they were like, oh my God, you have to read the big book. And I don't know about you guys, but when you first get sober and you try to read that, it's like, I was like, who is Bill? What is this? Is this true? Like, what is this about? I could not understand anything, and it was very boring and very wordy and horrible. But when I went through chapter by chapter with my sponsor, it really did make it come to life, and it did say things to me that stuck out. I mean, one thing I really noticed was me and Bill had a lot in common. We both thought we were going to do huge things with our lives, and we both thought we were way smarter than we really are, and we both dragged down other people while we did what we wanted, so that was another thing. One thing that also spoke to me was just talking about resentment, although I didn't realize it. I didn't think I had resentments. I didn't know what resentment was. And it talks about that as being like the core of like our soul sickness, that if you have resentment, that you're eventually going to want to do something to change the way you feel because it will just eat you alive. And I know like regular people, they're allowed to be like angry. They're allowed to hold grudges. They're allowed to be constantly jealous or constantly frustrated. But I'm not one of those people. So my fourth step, I spent probably 8 to 12 weeks on, which in my sponsor's eyes was a long time, and everyone, God picks out sponsors that are meant to be for them. So some people are supposed to get them done in a month, and some people maybe a year, I don't know. But my sponsor kind of was like 6 to 8 weeks, and after that I'm going to call you. And she never called me, and I was waiting on it because, you know, it was my fourth step, and that's what people do. But when I read my first fifth step, I really had like this freedom from my thinking, and it was the first time that all those voices in my head stopped. That's why I liked going to meetings, was because I constantly heard voices in my head all the time, just and when I went to the meetings, it would kind of like stop. And then when I did that fifth step with her, and just like I wrote down everything, and then she helped explain my part, which I really couldn't necessarily absorb. I wasn't really concerned about my part that much. I was more concerned about writing about what other people had done. But she later I saw, because when I did 6 and 7, I was seeing how it was my defects were creating things that weren't good for me. So it's really selfish in a way to kind of try to get rid of your defects of character, because you're still doing it for you, but it doesn't matter. But then I started making my amends, and there's a lot of power in that too. I know that when I got sober, I did a couple things to sort of make my own amends, and I also went through the first 3 steps by myself before I got a sponsor and had to start over. And I can tell you that is nothing short of a complete waste of time, but feel free to do what you want. But by the time I had a spiritual awakening in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a really good life, and I was really happy. I got to do pretty much anything I wanted, so I didn't really want to drink anymore. And I started to feel really good in my own skin, and kind of like, you know, I'd rather just not drink. It's way better. It's cheaper. And so I started doing other things. Like, I mean, I had a home group. Sometimes I would share meetings, give leads. I started sponsoring. That was kind of disheartening because, you know, everyone gets their first sponsee and people were like, well, don't hold your breath. And I was like, no, she's going to make it. She's going to stay sober. And I can tell you that my sponsor rate is 100% because I'm still sober, but I would have to say that pretty much all my sponsees have gone back out. And, it's, you know, I hope that, you know, I hope God's sent them to other people. I would rather that be the case than anything else. But in terms of staying sober, I mean, I think that's one thing that I have really been shooken up with. After I celebrated a year, people were like, well, now the real work begins. And I know that's the last thing anybody wants to hear because you feel like you have worked really fucking hard staying sober a year. I mean, I didn't know anybody who had stayed sober a year. I didn't know people that didn't drink for a year, you know. And, you know, it's really, like, been, like, a one day at a time thing. Life isn't perfect just because you're sober. I've worked the steps pretty much continuously. I know some people work the steps one time, and that's enough for them. I'm a really sick alcoholic, so I go straight back into them, and I go through them again. I try to write a nightly 10-step, which I know a lot of people are very good at doing it in their head. And I mean, really, they are. I'm not saying that they're not, but I can't do it. I've tried, and I'm just not good at it. I get really angry, and I start, like, flipping out, and I think that it just happens out of nowhere. And if I start doing a 10-step, I'm like, oh, okay, I see. I started getting fearful, or I started being sneaky, or started being dishonest. Because I have to be honest, like, I'm a really dishonest person. I will never be fully honest. I can almost guarantee that. I will always probably be self-seeking. I will always try to do the easier, softer way. That's one thing with alcoholics. They always want to do the easier, softer way. I have a sponsor. I've continuously had a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I share with her because I need a lot of accountability. One thing that happens when you get sober and stay sober is you see a lot of people who don't, and it's really, really painful, and it's really sad. They're great people, and I don't really know why I'm, you know, I've worked a program, but so do they, you know, and you go through a lot of stuff that you don't realize you're going to go through. And one of the biggest things for me has been emotional sobriety. I think it's really important, you know. It's like there's one of the stories, and it says he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. And when my ass was on fire, that was like, oh my God, gotta keep it going. Like, keep praying. Like, what can I do to be of service? What can I look at? Like, where am I fearful? What can I do, you know, to be more of service in AA? But when you're kind of, like, coasting and things are nice and things are breezy, it's real easy to be like, nah, I don't need to do that. Nah, I don't need to do that. I had sort of a mini, I wouldn't call it, like, an emotional bottom so much as an emotional, like, I was apathetic about sobriety. I was 6.5 years sober, and I thought there was nothing you could teach me. And I hated going to meetings, and I would roll my eyes, and I felt like I was entitled to more than I was getting. And it was partially because I had gotten a lot of stuff out of being sober. You know, when you do the right things, like, God blesses you. Like, you get things you don't technically deserve, but you think you're the one making it happen, and that's such a lie. Like, nothing good in my life is coming because of me. It's becoming from my higher power. And I really kind of, like, lost a connection with my higher power that I needed to restore. And it's because I really, like it says, we can rest on our laurels and we can get caught up in power, property, prestige, you know, your material things. And there's nothing wrong with wanting those things, but if those are more important than your spiritual purpose, you can be in trouble, you know. And I've seen it happen numerous times, and it happened to me without me even realizing it until I started getting out of it. But somebody basically told me that what I had was not constituting as an AA sponsor. And so I am guilty of that, having an AA sponsor who really wasn't a sponsor. You have to call them. You have to do stuff with them, apparently. So I got this woman who was, I thought the same thing when I started working with her that I thought when I first met people in AA was that they were happy, but kind of like, are they dumb? Like, they seem a little like dippy. I don't know what the word is, but we sat and we started going through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she's like, okay, every day I work step one and two. And she's like, you see, you do this and it's an immediate effect. You can do that any time of the day. And I was like, yeah, okay. But like, whatever she did with me helped God come in again. And that was so amazing. And I'm so grateful for that. And anytime that good things happen, I try to work my program harder, because that's when I need to work my program harder. I heard a speaker say that I'm not going to get drunk over a crisis. I'm going to get drunk when my shoelaces are untied, because those are the moments, like those little things in life, or when your life is good, is that's when you think you're not powerless, you know? Like, sometimes I don't realize I'm powerless over alcoholism, and then my disease is just waiting for me to get a little lazy or a little angry or a little irritable, and I start slacking. And, you know, I've seen people that have worked amazing programs. There's no reason why they should have relapsed, you know? And it's just that. Like, it's just this, like, small window, you know? Because we don't really have a mental defense. It really is something else is keeping me from using. Something else is keeping me from drinking. I feel like I came across a little bit more preachy than I would have liked. But, you know, it is hard when you see people die of this disease, when you're close to people that die of this disease. You don't want to see people die, you know? And it can be scary. And the life that we have sober can be such a gift. And I know, like, sometimes it looks really lame or it's boring, but, you know, it can be really great. And you don't have to have the same sobriety that somebody else has. If they don't have what you want, find somebody that does, you know. The first 15 people that came up to me, I didn't want anything they had, you know. But I did find people that had something I wanted. And I'm really grateful to be sober today. I think I'm pretty much done.
It's okay.
So thank you all so much. I appreciate it.